Welcome to episode 547 of the official Game Stitch podcast. I'm Ryan Walton, and today I am flying solo. So let me tell you the events that led to this very podcast. So what happened, and I'm not going to take all the blame, I'll take a little bit, but Gerald had informed me that he was on holiday. I didn't think a lot about it because I knew that friend of the show Marshall 205 could be on. But then we were playing games together on, I think, Thursday night. And I was reminded that he's going on holiday the same weekend as Gerald. Now, I don't know if they're together. I don't know that they're not together. So this could be a group vacation that I wasn't invited to. It could be that they happen to end up at the same place, or it could be that there are two separate vacations. I think this is the most unlikely scenario, but there are two separate vacations that they went on. And so I knew that on Thursday, and this is the part where it might be my fault. On Thursday, I had several options. I could have, the most obvious option is I should have texted Dan and said, "Hey Dan, can you be on the show this weekend?" That would have given him, Thursday night, it was late. So that would have given him all day Friday and all day Saturday to know if that was a good fit or not. By then I could have had a backup choice. Maybe friend of the show, Matt, original host Matt could have also come on the show if I had given him a heads up on maybe, let's say, Friday. But what I elected to do was not think about it again until last night at about, 10:30. So after Thursday, it never crossed my mind again until last night at 10:30 that I had to record the next morning and I hadn't asked anyone. And it didn't seem fair at that point to reach out and say, "Hey, can you do it in, 9 hours? I don't want to do business that way. I don't want to treat my friends that way. I'm sure someone would have stepped up and done it, but it's not really the point. And so I'm just going to come on here I'm going to go solo. Now, the good news is I have a plan. I'm going to deviate from what we normally do. And for longtime listeners, you know that I am a fan of vintage and classic and just old video games, the things I grew up with, the things that hopefully you grew up with or you have some nostalgia for as well, or maybe things that you never played and are always curious about. So today I'm going to spend some time just focusing on, I'm going to say, maybe not my favorite console, but one of my favorite consoles and for sure my most nostalgic console. And today I'm going to talk about the Nintendo Entertainment System, also known as the NES, Famicom, those kind of things. Now, it's not going to be a standard show. If you don't like to hear me ramble on about the things I like, this probably isn't going to be super enjoyable for you. But that's kind of where I'm at. That's the plan for today. Man, that's what we're going to do. So, I just want to dive right in. The NES, again, the Nintendo Entertainment System, also known as the Family Computer, FC, commonly referred to as the Famicom. So, it was first released in Japan in 1983. It kind of got the North American test market release on October 8th, 1985. So, that's the date that we'll kind of refer to. Now, I was born in December of 85, so, this system is older than me, which is, a testament to the fact that it's still what I consider to be my first real console. And it was something that my dad had purchased and had in the home, and so I grew up, having an NES. Like, as long as I remember, it was around. And I really truly love this system, but I want to look at a couple details before we just let me ramble. But it came out for $179. When you take inflation into account, that's the equivalent of $530 as of 2022. So huge price tag. And they actually made NESs in North America all the way up to August 14th, 1995, which is incredibly impressive. They actually made Famicoms all the way till 2003. That's even more crazy. But 61.91 million sold. Trying to think if there's anything else here that stands alone. So the best-selling game is obviously the pack-in of Super Mario Brothers with 40 million units sold as of September 13th, 2010. The best standalone selling game was Super Mario Brothers 2 with 10 million sold. And I kind of think I don't want to ramble off facts to you, so I think I'm going to stop there. I think most of us know what the NES is. If you don't, you've probably seen one. And I don't want this to be me rambling facts that you can find literally anywhere. So instead, what I would rather do is talk about the games. Spend a little time there talking about what I love, what I miss, my thoughts on the system. And what makes it so special for me. And so first and foremost, let's talk about the design. Gray, square box, iconic. Everyone knows the colors from the original NES, or from the NES, I don't know why I say original, from the original Nintendo. It's the light gray on top, the dark gray on bottom, the little strip of black where your controller's ports go in. You've got two controller ports. You've got two buttons on the front, so you have your power and your reset. And then you have the flip-up lid that you then slide your iconic cartridge down in, press down, and then you shut the lid, you push the power button, and bam, you're in the game, you're loving life. And this thing is ingrained in me. Like I said, all through growing up, I always had one available. It was always there. And, you know, I grew up playing this with my dad. And so I just kind of wanted to reminisce. That old square controller that would dig into your hands. I know they have the dog bone controller with the rounded corners. That's not the one I want to talk about. You know, I want to talk about the rectangle, sharp corner, D-pad on the left, start, select, B and A on the right. Sorry, start, select in the middle, B and A on the right. Again, that iconic gray with the black and darker gray on the top. And it's just that controller is my youth in an image. And so I absolutely love that controller. It does feel like crap, but it doesn't matter. It's so light too. If you hold one now compared to the weight of a PS5 controller or an Xbox controller, it's so, so light. It did have the cord on it, so we weren't wireless, obviously. Oh, shoot. Got a little yawn action. And, I remember, I guess probably the first game I was introduced to, like most people, was the pack-in of Super Mario Bros. So that's kind of where I started. And then, you know, my dad was a little younger when he had me. And honestly, I growing up, I played what we had. So it was a situation where he would buy a game, or we'd find something at like a yard sale or a thrift store, or we'd go to, you know, a store, and he would kind of buy whatever game he wanted, and I would play it while I was younger. And once I got old enough to know the difference in what I wanted to play and not wanted to play, we kind of reversed roles, right? He would take me to town and I would get a game, and then he would play whatever I got. And so it was kind of interesting because I felt like I kind of came up with what was available and what he liked, and then he switched over to kind of playing what I wanted. And it kind of helped form me. So I've got a list of just popular games pulled up here, and I want to just go through and highlight some of the ones I love, share my memories for them. And some of these are probably not the most popular ones, because some of them, honestly, I didn't play the popular ones because we didn't have them. But Excitebike is where I'm going to start here. And Excitebike was one of those games that was simple in its existence, but something about it as a child really captivated me. And even as an adult, I don't like to play Excitebike, but I will absolutely turn it on for a second, take in the sights, the sounds, play a couple, and then drop back out. But I do have a soft spot for Excitebike, and I think it's one of those games that, you know, it doesn't have a place today. You know, they tried to bring it back with the Excite Trucks on the Wii. It wasn't great. I did play it, but you know, I think that Excitebike will always have a place, even though I think this is a franchise that's probably done for. But I did super enjoy it, and I absolutely have fond memories of that. So let's move on. Battletoads and Double Dragon. That's the next one that's kind of going to cause me a little pause. So it's a Rareware crossover developed by the Battletoads team, and adds Billy and Johnny to the lineup. Again, good, stupid brawler fun. I'm a sucker for a brawler. I grew up playing brawlers. Some of my favorite games for NES were brawlers, and absolutely, you know, just Battletoads in general, Double Dragon in general, those are two games that I remember sitting down with my dad and kind of playing back and forth and just really enjoying. You know, it's simple. You know, more games I'm going to talk about and I'll spend a little more time on, but I love the brawler genre, and I think you're seeing it come back, and I am excited about that. Let's see here. Again, I've got a list, and I'm just kind of scrolling through to make sure. I got a lot of popular stuff here. Duck Hunt. Let's get into the accessories. So, Duck Hunt had the light gun with it. You could get it in the pack-in, or you could buy it separately. But Duck Hunt was a game changer for me. I remember, actually, I lived at my grandparents' house with my dad, and I remember just being upstairs countless hours in the bedroom playing Duck Hunt. You know, I've got the gun. I'm up there by myself. I'm probably, knowing me, 2.5 feet from the TV, almost touching the gun to the TV, and just having the time of my life. I remember hours and hours dumped into Duck Hunt. If I remember properly, we actually ended up getting the Duck Hunt and the light gun at I could be misremembering, but I think we got it at a yard sale. And so that's kind of my first memories of the light gun and the games that I would eventually play with it. And Duck Hunt is obviously my most fond memory of the light gun. But it's so simple. It's so good. Again, like most of these experiences, it's the lights, the sounds, the feel. You know, I can still hear the noises, the clicking of the gun, the slash zapper. It's just good, wholesome fun. You know, you're shooting waterfowl. It's not anything crazy. It's actually not even, you know, if you look back, it's not really good. I hate to say that, but it's just fun. It was just Nintendo's peripheral game, accessory game was strong, and probably none stronger than the Zapper. But I'm going to talk about some of the accessories once I get through this list of games. But Duck Hunt, a seminal game. If you haven't checked it out, you should. You owe it to the system, to the nostalgia, if you're an NES fan and for some reason haven't played it. But I find it, I don't believe that anyone's had an NES, played an NES, and not experienced the light gun. Now, it's important to remember, you got to have a CRT for it to work properly or at all. So it's not as simple as just finding one and hooking one up at this point. You got to do a little groundwork. So keep that in mind. Moving on, I've got Tecmo Bowl. Actually, Tecmo Super Bowl pulled up next. So Tecmo Bowl is on my list too, but Tecmo Super Bowl is also a game that I played. Now this is the update. Let's just talk about Tecmo Bowl. Let's spend a little time on Tecmo Bowl instead. 1989 release. Again, a game that I think we got. I don't think we bought it new. I think we got it at the flea market or something like that. But Tecmo Bowl, player versus the computer. It's just good, stupid fun in most cases. It really gives me the same vibes as a brawler. And it's not similar, but, you know, in that same experience is where I would turn it on and I never had a bad time with Tecmo Bowl. I never had a bad time with, you know, some of these others I'm going to talk about. But Tecmo Bowl is one of those games that probably went in and out of my NES just as much as any other game. Growing up, I loved sports, and there is something so simple about Tecmo Bowl and something so easy about jumping in and jumping out. The next one on the list is Adventure Island 2. For anyone that's a longtime listener, you know that I have an extreme soft spot for Adventure Island. I played the absolute mess out of those games. I probably played those more than just about anything other than Mario. I have ultra fond memories of Adventure Island. You know, they did a remake in Japan, I think, for the PlayStation 1 that I imported, and it was fun. You know, it's, this game is special for me because of what it is and because of how much I played it, and I played it with my dad. But, you know, I don't need this game again. I don't need it back. I don't even want it back. But, you know, a collection of these games, like a good remastering, just clean it up a little bit, absolutely would play this. They're very, like, they're very like Mario clone-ish. I mean, they're doing different things, but it's very much a side-scrolling platformer. It's just so good. Released by Hudson. Hudson Soft. They had the little bee as the icon. You could actually collect them in the game, which is also a fun Easter egg. And it came out in 91, but I absolutely love Adventure Island. This one is actually Adventure Island 2 on this list, but it doesn't matter. Adventure Island is just awesome. River City Ransom, again, you know, basic brawling with, you know, kind of some comedy mixed in that I didn't pick up on as a kid, but absolutely loved River City Ransom. Same idea. I mean, just about every brawler that came out that I could get my hands on, I played. We also did a lot of renting. So we go to the, you know, the video store and rent games. And the brawlers were a popular category for rental for me because we could kind of pick it up and just play through it till we had to return it. So I absolutely love that. And River City Ransom is one of those games that you kind of saw some resurgence in the River City Girls that came out a couple years ago. And I played some of that also and really had a good time with it. So let's move on from that. Adventure Island 3, again, I'm not going to spend any time reflecting, but same thing. Adventure Island is one of my favorite series of all time just because of the experience I had on NES. This is a list of someone's best 50 best games of all time, and so a lot of this is your big popular stuff, like your, like I've scrolled past Metroids and Zeldas and stuff, but I'll be honest, I didn't spend a lot of time with Zelda 2 or with a lot of these others. Bionic Commando, Capcom's Bionic Commando. You had the grappling hook, platforming. It was, for me, it was kind of fresh, right? You weren't used to that kind of 2D platforming back then. And so it was definitely different. I think this is a game that we rented. I don't remember getting very far in Bionic Commando. I remember playing it. I remember my dad liking it. But it was one of those things where I would imagine we probably rented it for a couple weeks and then ended up having to return it. And probably I didn't pick it again just because of the nature of it. Super Mario Bros. 2. So, this game has got a storied history, but basically it is a, you know, it's a reskinned version of the Japan-only Doki Doki Panic. It was very different, a departure from Super Mario Brothers that we had played. But I love this game, too. I told you earlier it was the best-selling standalone game. It released October 1988 in the U.S., and, you know, this was a different take on Mario for sure. The environments looked different. The sound was different. Oh, man. I've got more out. It's been a long time since I went by myself on this. But anyways, the sights, the sounds were different. You know, the characters were familiar, but, you know, you had just more options the way everything moved. The plucking the turnips, the doors, the you know, everything. And, you know, some iconic characters have moved over from Super Mario Bros. 2. And, you know, I think that game is still fondly remembered. And maybe it has even prospered over time, too, the way people, you know, reflect back on Super Mario Bros. 2. But I remember as a kid, like I said, the game I kind of started with was Super Mario Bros. And then when we got Super Mario Bros. 2, I was so confused. It was so different, but it was the characters that I already loved and had spent so much time, and they looked so much better. But I remember being completely confused by what that game was. And so, you know, it led me to believe that those games were going to continue to change because it was such a big departure. And, of course, I didn't know any of the story behind it back then. I was just a kid playing games. But I definitely... I definitely love Super Mario Bros. 2. It's another game that if I have an NES hooked up, I'm gonna play Super Mario Bros. 2 just for a little bit of time, just to hear all those things. Again, it was a profound change from the first game. It had, I would say, you know, not the most iconic, you know, as far as your characters go, but tons of Super Mario Brothers lore has moved on from that game, and so definitely a staple in my house. All the Mario stuff we went out and got. Next one's a yard sale find that I spent countless hours with. And that's Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. Came out in June 1990 in the U.S. Classic co-op, you know, romp. It's a side scroller. You know, think of your Bart versus the Space Mutants kind of idea. But yeah, Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers. It is one of, in my opinion, one of the top tier NES games. It is well crafted. I remember playing it. I'll tell you how endearing this game was. My grandmother, who did not care for video games, I remember her helping me through some of these levels as a child when my dad was at work. It's a Capcom hit, and super, super good memories of Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers. It was one of my staples. I'm going to talk about all my games and what happened to them as part of this, but I definitely remember it. Ninja Gaiden, Gaiden, however you like that said, March 1989 in the U.S., known as Shadow Warrior in Europe, just in case we have any European listeners out there. Now, I remember getting this as a kid. It was a Tecmo joint. I wasn't good enough to play this game. I didn't enjoy this game, and it was because I was so bad at it. I remember playing through the first level lots when I was younger and just not having a good time with it. But this is a game that I fondly remember my dad playing and being good at, so there are some memories there. Dr. Mario, a game that I disliked as a kid, but I remember watching my dad play a lot, and I have super fond memories of as an adult. I actually have a Dr. Mario arcade machine, and I absolutely love Dr. Mario. And I wish that I had gotten it as a kid, because I think we could have played together a lot. But, you know, it just didn't hit for me. But I do really, really like it. So much so that I decided to take up giant space in my garage with the arcade. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, the arcade game. Now we're getting into my favorite list of favorite games, short list of favorite. December 1990. I mean, everything Turtles on the NES is absolutely my jam. I was a Turtles kid growing up. I loved all the movies, the cartoons. I was all in on Turtles, all the toys. It was absolutely my favorite franchise. So I gobbled up any and everything. I mean, they had me hook, line, and sinker, right? If it was a Turtles game and it was out, my dad would take me to Toys R Us. That's what I had to get. That's the one I was for sure going to buy. No matter what, it was the one I was going to get. So, let's keep going here. We're making good progress on this list. There's just a lot that I just didn't play. Nope. Sometimes when I look, you know, I've played pretty much everything on this list, but sometimes when I look back at what I didn't play as a kid, I miss some real gems. Batman the video game. Sunsoft 1991 in the U.S., classic 2D platformer, and again, you know, growing up, loved the Batman movies. You know, it's kind of recounting the beat of Tim Burton's 1989 film, and again, it was awesome to be Batman, to feel like you were Batman, to have Batman's abilities, and to play through that world, to see, you know, Gotham in that way, and another game that I spent a lot of time with. You know, it was, platformers were probably my favorite genre, and then after that, you know, definitely like a any kind of beat 'em up or brawler or anything like that, things that you could do easily as a kid, and Batman was high up on that list. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, The Manhattan Project, was a game I got kind of towards the end of my NES time. Released in February 92, so really close to the end of the NES. But I remember getting this before. This is one of the last games I kind of got. And at this point, I think I had kind of, I was ready for something new. You know, I was ready for the next system. I was ready for a Super Nintendo, something like that. And so some of these later ones I got, I didn't spend as much time with. DuckTales, another staple. DuckTales 1989 US, another Capcom game. I mean, every kid grew up with DuckTales back then. And so, you know, the idea of being in that world, Uncle Scrooge, all of that, Huey, Dewey, Louie, that game is absolutely a blast. And DuckTales is a highly recommend. They're all part of that Capcom Afternoon Collection, whatever they called it, that came out a couple years ago. Tetris was a game that we had growing up. It's one of the ones that we always kept around. I didn't play Tetris a lot, but again, a game that I would see my dad go to, November 1989 on the, in the US release. I probably spent the most time with Tetris on the Game Boy. And so, I won't spend too much time there, but that's kind of where I started. Super Mario Bros. Again, the game, the foundation, the one that started it all for me. And I just still to this day will always put it on when I have the chance. I have played this and played this and played this. It's not the most played game I have, but it is up there. It's probably number two. And I think most people who still play games to this day probably started there. That's probably where this journey began. And you know, it's one of those things where, it's hard not to tip your cap at Super Mario Bros. Because not just Nintendo, but the industry in general, chased the success of that, the design of that, the music of that. I mean, everything moved forward based on that game. So again, November 17th, 1985 in the US. Let's see, we're moving on. We're getting really Kirby's Adventure, 1993. So I have fond memories of Kirby, but they come from later. And you know what? The Manhattan Project may be the same. Maybe I didn't play these on my original playthrough. I'll talk you kind of through my NES journey, but I may have played these on the back end. But Kirby is something I have fond memories of. Again, you know, classic side scroller, but I kind of think Kirby might have been the second time around. So I won't spend much time reflecting there. Let's see what else we got on this list. Punch-Out. Punch-Out is a game that I absolutely remember renting. So there was a place beside my dad's work that we rented from Nintendo. It was October 18th, 1987 in the U.S. And was playing Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. Rented from the store, and I remember it was in one of the plastic cases, and they actually had photocopied the instruction manual and the front cover of the game. That's how they did it. And so it had the black and white Mike Tyson's Punch-Out cover. I had no idea even what it was. But it looked so awesome, the art on there. And I remember renting it, and that's probably the game we rented the longest because I wanted to beat it, and we just kept renting it and renting it and renting it. And I don't think as a child I ever got even close to beating it, but a pillar of the NES library. The Legend of Zelda is a game that my dad played. It's not a game that I played, but fond memories of watching him play it. I just couldn't figure it out. I was too young. But it was a good time. And then the last one on this list, and the game I've probably talked about the most on NES, Super Mario Bros. 3. That's my most favorite game of all time. February 12th, 1990 in the US. And the way it moved everything forward was the same thing that Super Mario Bros. Did the first time and Super Mario Bros. 2 did the second time. And it wasn't conceivable that they would be able to take that game and make it even better on the same platform and to, again, drive what was possible on that system. And that game holds up so beautiful. That iconic cover, the yellow, the blue writing with Mario on the front kind of flying. And that game is perfection. It is so good. Even after all these years, the way it holds up, everything like that, it is just something else. And just, I can't say enough about that game. That is my childhood right there, that game. I probably own that game more than any other game. I own it for every system you can own it for and every way you can own it. I will buy one every time I see it, even now. It just super, super good. I want to touch on a couple not on this list, or at least one not on this list. David Crane's A Boy and His Blob is a game I played a ton of. Trouble in Bloblonia. And for some reason it didn't make this list, probably because it's not great, but I love it. North America was January 1990. And it's a puzzle platformer. I was, again, getting a little age on me where I could kind of figure this out. My dad could help me, but you feed your blob different jelly beans, and we've talked about it before on here, but, you know, different things would happen to help you get through the levels. That was the puzzle part of it, but I definitely have fond memories of A Boy and His Blob as well. Now, I'm probably leaving a ton of games off here because I just went off of a list that someone else had made, and so, you know, these things all come down to taste and your preferences, so it doesn't matter here. I didn't sit and spend hours going through this, but, you know, I wanted to just kind of touch on some of the highlights of that system. And I know Adventure Island, Mario, for me, you know, those are kind of the staples, but I played a lot around the edges. So anything I forgot. And so it's a little hard for me to remember. I kind of want to look back as what I played as a child. But my journey from the NES is that I got the NES, and then I, you know, we had it growing up, and I played it all through kind of my childhood. But then I told you towards the end, I was a little antsy. I wanted something else. And that something else we ended up getting was, the Genesis. But I made a critical error, later on that would, you know, I still had my NES and I had my Genesis. I had them at the same time. So I went from that Nintendo kid to the Genesis, which maybe if I do another solo podcast, I'll talk about that. Give me one second here. Let me get this, make sure I'm right about my dates here. So what happened was I got the Genesis. I played the Genesis all through. I kept all my NES stuff. It was still in the house. And then right before, I want to think, let me make sure I'm right here. I don't want to, because I made a critical error, and the timing is important. So I believe, okay, this is right. Okay. So I had the NES. I had the Genesis. Life was good. I wanted something new, though. I was ready to just get everything that I could. And I remember, let's see, what did I do here? I want to get this right. I think I made a trade at some point, or my dad made a trade. I mean, I was probably talked about with it, but we ended up trading. I want to think maybe we traded. I don't remember what we did. Anyway, somehow we ended up with, we ended up with the TurboGrafx 16. And at that point, I think I had the Genesis and I had that. You know, I had the TurboGrafx, and I thought the NES was something I was never going to play before. My dad was going to the auction at the time, and so I made the unfortunate decision to sell all of my NES stuff so I could get money so I could buy more TurboGrafx, or maybe I sold it to get the money to buy the TurboGrafx, because I think we bought the TurboGrafx from a friend that my dad worked with who was wanting to buy the Jaguar, which the timeline's about right. North America on the Jaguar was 1993, so I think, again, I may be misremembering the story, but I believe what happened was he wanted to sell it so that he could get a Jaguar, and they were so expensive at the time. And so to sell it, he wanted to get rid of his TurboGrafx. I wanted the TurboGrafx. It was cool. I wanted to play Bonk. They had this awesome, you know, card system that you slid in that I'd never seen anything like it. And so I think I took the NES, all my games, everything that went with it, down to the auction and sold it, so that I could then turn around and buy the TurboGrafx. And this is probably my worst memory of the NES, because I regret every day not having my original system and games and everything like that. I had to get rid of them. didn't have to. I chose to get rid of them, and I've put that collection back together as an adult. I have all of those, but it just hurts me to think about that I don't have mine. I don't have the ones that I grew up playing, because those are even more special. And I sold them at auction. I think I got like $100 as a kid, which was a fortune, but I turned around and spent that to get the TurboGrafx. If there is one shining light of all this, I do still have my TurboGrafx from when I was a kid. I still have that very one that somehow survived through the times. Or at least I think I do. I think it's packed away, but I'm pretty confident that I have it. But yeah, so, you know, I grew up with it. I played it. It was always around, especially as it got later. It was easier to find games at a flea market or whatever, a yard sale. But then I sold it. And then when I was in high school, you know, my mom still had one that I played a little bit after that, which is why I played some of those games after. But I didn't, you know, they got easier to find. I would buy them in a yard sale. I'd take them to my mom's house and I would play it there. But she ended up donating that Nintendo to the church. And so I lost it as well. All the games that I had with it went along with it. And so, you know, when I was in high school, I decided to start collecting games. And the NES was where I wanted to start. And, you know, my very first mission was to go get those games I had, right? Chase those memories. And I did. And, you know, I played a lot of games that I missed, a lot of stuff that came out towards the end of that life cycle. And I went back and played them, you know, as a teen. And I have super good memories of there. You know, I fell back in love with the NES then. And so that was really neat for me to kind of have that second coming with the system. You know, as time has progressed, I've bought more NESs, and, you know, I bought some of the things I couldn't afford or have as a kid. Rob the Robot was one of those things that I always wanted growing up, but it was just too expensive for us. You know, I was able to get that as an adult. You know, the trackpad isn't something we ever had. You know, I was able to get that as an adult. Some of the more rare games, the top loading NES, you know, thinking about the fond memories of the NES, there's also a lot of frustration around trying to get games to play, right? You push them in, you click them down, blue flashing screen. You put it in, you push it down, screen's all jacked up. You put it in, push it down, nothing's happening. You know, it was a lot of that. And, you know, people turning them upside down, pushing them down where they just barely catch the front edge and make a loud click. And what it is those 32-pin connectors down in there were garbage. They were made out of something cheap, and they just get corroded over time. But you know, as an adult, I was able to get that top-loading NES, which was a game changer. The dog bone controllers, which feel nice, rounded edges, no sharp corners. I mean, they really got that thing dialed in by the end of its life cycle. But you know, that's not my NES. You know, I grew up with the old boy, and that's the one I like to look back on. Even, you know, having my choice between, you know, one of them sitting on a, you know, bookshelf to display or hooked up to the TV, I'd rather have the classic. But for ease, the last one I had hooked up that was playable in my house was the top loader with the dog bone, because it was just plug and play. I mean, I was able to put a game in and no matter what, it would work. So very fond memories there. One of my favorite collector's pieces I have is a Sharp TV with a built-in NES. So right on there, you've got a little front cover, flips down, you plug your game right in your TV the same way they were built in with a VCR, and your controller plugs right into the front of the TV, and you just push a game button and you're playing. And that's one of my favorite NES accessories. You know, Rob the Robot is something I hooked up as an adult and played and loved. It's not, or as I guess a late teen, you should say, but you know, Rob probably would have really hit hard as a kid, but again, cool to have now. A lot of just the wacky controllers I have. The NES Advantage controller was something I got when I started collecting that I wish I'd had when I was a kid. I just love all the accessories, and not just from Nintendo, all the third-party stuff. And I mean, they really got wacky with the way the accessories work for that system. And so that's definitely something that was very cool to me. If anyone who grew up playing games talks to me about wanting to collect, I always think they should start there. You've got like 800 and something games to pick from or something like that. And there's a little something for everybody, but they're all so magical. And it still to this day is my most fond memories around gaming revolve around NES. And I'm not a Nintendo fanboy by any stretch of the imagination. And I don't really play Switch as much as I wish I did, but those early days, you know, that helped form me were all really, you know, I was solid Nintendo all through my youth until we could afford a Genesis. And then I made that switch over there I actually completely missed the Super Nintendo, and then I came back to Nintendo for the Nintendo 64. Fell back in love with the platform and the system. Skipped GameCube again, and then, you know, we move on to adult life where I started being able to get it. But, you know, I could do a whole nother episode on just the original Game Boy and what that meant to me to have that freedom to play everywhere, because that was another one that, I mean, as far as nostalgia goes, that's probably number two. And so I'd love to do a show on that as well. And just kind of reflect back. I love the NES. I don't think everyone should go out and get one, but I do think if you have fond memories, if you can go back and find you a little CRT to go back and play those on, I think that you will, it's something cool to bring the kids up on. It's something cool for you to go back and play. And they're still pretty available. The price has gone up, you know, in the last 10 years has really kind of increased, but still available. You know, the common games that everybody love, they carry a higher price, but they're out there. They're easy to get off of eBay or Mercari or you know, I still see lots pop up on Craigslist sometimes, and I have to watch myself because I have too much. But, you know, the idea of just going and grabbing 20, you know, NES games that are thrown in a box is still very appealing to me, and cleaning them and taking the time. And, you know, it was definitely the Nintendo, the NES has been part of my life in several different phases, whether it was playing as a kid and then, you know, still playing it even as I moved on in my mom's house, and then, you know, starting to get those systems again when I was in my late teens, to as an adult being like a full-blown collector and playing those games and not just buying them, but like taking them and playing them and cleaning them and trying to make sure everything was in good shape and taken care of and packed away and organized. And, you know, it has come up several times, and then as they re-release those games and they make them available again, and, you know, just falling in love with those games over and over and over, they've kind of been a staple. And so that's kind of why I want to start with the NES and kind of my journey with the NES. And hopefully it wasn't boring to listen to me ramble. I know you're probably screaming that I forgot 1,000 games that are amazing. And I probably forgot 1,000 games that I thought were amazing too. I don't really care about your list, but I probably forgot ones I thought was amazing, that I thought were amazing when I was growing up. But I just wanted to just briefly run through a list, anything that stood out at me. Any, you know, I'm sure I am forgetting lots and lots, but it's a good place for me to start. Just talk about some of those memories and kind of why I still play games to this day. I mean, that system is the reason that I love video games and continue to love video games. And, you know, my tastes have changed. You know, some of my feelings about games have obviously changed, but, you know, that simplicity is something that I think is missing in most games today, which is why playing, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge was so magical for me, because it carried that formula over so well. You know, it was exactly what I wanted it to be. And, you know, they weren't trying to do too much. They kept it really pure, really simple. You know, seeing some of these remasters come out and, you know, even stuff I wasn't fond of. I didn't grow up playing Mega Man, but seeing that collection come out and the Saturday Morning collection and just all these remakes that are popping back up and all the remasters. And I mean, these games are special and they're connected to a lot of people, you know, on that level. And so, if you were nostalgic for it then, you know, I'd be interested to know that if you have thoughts of getting back into it now, and if you didn't grow up with it, you know, what your thoughts are on seeing it. You know, what do you think when you look at those systems? You probably think they look crappy. That's what I think about the Atari. When I look back at the 2600, I'm like, this is terrible, because that was just a little before me. We had one, but that's not where I played, right? When you look at the Atari versus the Nintendo, I spent my time on the Nintendo. So, you know, if you have thoughts on it, let me know. If I missed your favorite game, I don't need a list, but if I missed your favorite game and you want to reach out, also let me know that. That would be great. If you think me talking for, you know, 45 minutes straight too much, you don't really need to let me know. I know that already. Poor planning is why I'm in this spot, but I think I was able to do something that, for me was fun, at least, to talk about those games. So, if you have any feedback for me as far as the NES, any memories you want to share, keep them brief. If you don't, that's okay too. If they're your memories and you want to keep them locked up and bottle them down deep, that's fine. But if you want to share any of those classic memories growing up just on the NES, like I said, maybe I'll do more of these. Maybe Gerald will cover one whenever I'm out. You know, maybe these will happen. But, you know, share your memories about the NES if you want to, or share, you know, one or two games that are, you know, growing up helped shape you and those kind of things. So that's all I really have. There's lots of things I could cover. This is not a deep dive into the NES. This is just some of my memories growing up, you know, just to fill the gap. Short, it's fat, it fills the gap. That's a Celtic Pride reference. If you haven't seen that movie, you should watch it too. But this is episode 547. As far as I know, Gerald will be back next week. Who knows? He's got 154 vacations planned, holidays planned this year. So, I mean, it may just be me solo all the time on this show. We're just going to have to see what happens. His commitment to the show right now, I would call low. His commitment to traveling all across the U.S., high. So, you know, we'll just have to see how it shapes out. I've always been dedicated and probably deserve some sort of, you know, pay bump or promotion, something like that, that we need to talk about when he gets back. But this has been episode 547. Thanks for spending the time with me. Remember, you can find us on social medias at @game_stitch. You can find Gerald at Hoffin Show and patreon.com/GameStitch if you want to support us over there. You don't have to give us a dime. Tell your friends, your family, maybe your veterinarian about us. Just somebody, you know, like that, that you think really needs to know about us. Let them know. And we'll be back next week. Same time, same place. Good night.